Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to hashtag My Investing Story. I am your host tonight, Ione McNeil, and I also have my co-host, Ms. Ann McNeil. Say hello.
Hello, hello.
So tonight we're excited to bring you our special guest, Shamika Beeks, out of New York. Where in New York are you located, Shamika?
I'm in Brooklyn.
Okay. Are you born and raised in Brooklyn?
Born and raised in Brooklyn, yes.
Okay. Are you a Bed-Stuy girl, a Flatbush girl?
So, okay. My zip code is 11212, which is a zip code that shares space with Brownsville, but the neighborhood that I'm from, it's called the 90s, so we kind of considered ourselves like East Flatbush Brownsville. It literally would be who you're talking to, and that would determine like where you're from, but just a very interesting neighborhood to grow up in.
Okay. I had many friends. Well, I should say few, not many. So I'm aware of the Bed-Stuy area,
okay.
Flatbush area, the end of the five.
Okay. Okay.
So,
next time you're in New York, Ione, you're going to have to, you know, hit me up.
I will. I mean, last time I was in New York was last December.
Okay.
I had a friend who is the orchestrator for the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra, and they were playing jazz at Lincoln Center, so I went to visit them. But yeah, I love New York. When I used to live in D.C., I used to go monthly. New York is a beautiful place. So
you are certainly familiar with the city, and you're born and raised in Florida. Like that's home for you. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Born and raised in Florida, Miami, West Palm Beach, and I can say too that I used to visit New York when the Barclays Center was being built.
Gotcha.
Every month I was coming, I was like watching it go up, and I've seen it change. I've seen Brooklyn change because this is like
Brooklyn is definitely different from when I grew up. The era
each
that I grew
decade,
up.
Each decade, I'm sure. Each decade.
Even when you say Bed-Stuy, I'm like, oh. You're going to the safe part of Brooklyn now, but before you wasn't able to say that. So, Brooklyn is definitely, it's changed.
Excellent. So with that being said, we usually like to start the show with taking our guests back to the earliest memory of money. And so we already talked about you growing up in New York. So what were your first memories of money? Was it talked about in the home, not talked about? Just kind of walk us through your first memories of money and your relationship to money as a kid.
So I could be honest and transparent, right? Okay.
Please do.
I would say growing up, my relationship with money was that there wasn't enough of it. I grew up poor, basically. And when it came to, just money, what I heard a lot of was, we don't have no money. There's not enough money, trying to do things like, oh, yeah, let's go to Disney World, let's go to Toys R Us. Those were luxuries that were pretty much far-fetched. So when it came to money in my household, it was, we got to stretch a dollar. We have to, make certain things last. So I just remember it not being enough, but at the same time, always having what I needed. So when it came to money, I would say my mother was definitely the one who will be like, if you have a dollar, you save a quarter, because you don't know when you're going to need the quarter. It'll add up eventually. But growing up, there was never enough of it. And it was always like, you know, we had to do what we had.
And having that kind of childhood, because it makes me think about some of us that grow up not having, depending on how we internalize that experience, we either go to the extreme opposite, like, well, when I grow up, I'm going to make sure I have money. You know, we've had guests that are children of the Depression era, where, you know, they watch their parents distrust the market and be big savers. And a lot of times that's a huge influence on what you as a child decide is important as you become an adult. So how did that, because I think what you just shared is a balanced view of not having enough, but also being keenly aware of having what you need. So what kind of money aspirations did you have growing up? Was it something that you were focused on, or did you just kind of say, well, this is what it is, this is what I'm exposed to?
So I would say it was always the, you know, the ideal of I'm going to be rich one day, right? And with that ideal, it was, well, how do you become rich? And becoming rich was kind of like, we got to hit the lotto. We got to play the lotto, right? It was never the conversation of, you know, let's invest in stock. It was never that. It was, you know, we're gonna play the lotto. We're gonna play some numbers, and we're gonna try to hit it big, make it big. And I will say, with my family, one thing that was passed down was life insurance policy. So it was always, you know, life insurance policies. Somebody passed away, we knew that some money or something was going to come from a life insurance policy. So even though that wasn't a, how can I say it? It wasn't like, you know, we didn't think about it as, oh, you know, an investment tool. It was a way of somebody passed away, we bury them, we're able to bury them, and there's money is going to come from it. But I don't know. It was definitely, you know, go to school, you know, work hard, get a good government job, and, you know, get the benefits, and just be happy with what you have. But the ideal of, like, rich, yeah, it came in the form of got to hit the lotto, got to hit that number.
It must come overnight.
Say that again?
It must come overnight.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Nothing over time.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that for a lot of us that don't know how to take the tortoise approach in the tortoise and hare story, we don't know a lot, but we do with what we have, and that, I think, leads us to only life insurance policies, playing the lotto, and playing the numbers, because those are the only things that we see that will afford us, hopefully one day, a payout, a big payout, a small payout, you know. So, when did you realize that you needed, not just needed to start investing, but when did you first come into the concept of investing, stocks, bonds, mutual funds?
So I will say I was probably about 24, 25. So that was 2005, 2006, one of those numbers, one of those years. I was working for the Department of Forensic Science out in Fairfax, Virginia. And, you know, it was kind of like my first real government job out of college. And I'm working for this company in which, you know, I'm the youngest. And I was around scientists. I was around, like, it was because we were a small team. So I'm around scientists. There's the office manager. There's the executive director. And I would hear them having conversations about stock, right? So I'm sitting at my desk sometimes with my headphones on, and I'm just listening to them, you know, just talking about what's going up, what's going down. And, you know, even with me reflecting on it right now, part of me is like, maybe they were, you know, BI members, because they would, like, meet up on the weekend and for the most part come to work, you know, the following day or a couple of days later, just talking about stock. You know, they had the newspaper and they're monitoring it, and that was kind of the language in the office. So here it is. I'm, like I said, I'm 24, 25 years old, from Brooklyn, felt like a fish out of water working in Fairfax, Virginia. And, you know, I'm like, that's not a conversation that I can be a part of, because I don't know what they're talking about, right? They're using these terms, they're throwing things around. And for me, it was, you know, since it's intimidating, I'll go get a book, right? Like I'll research and Google a book or something. And that's what I did. So I, like, privately ordered a book and purchased the book. The book came, and I pick up the book, and I'm reading this book, and I'm like, I don't even understand what this book is talking about. But one thing I will say is that the author of Peter Lynch, he said it, you know, plainly so many times, invest in stock, invest in stock. So even though I'm looking at the pictures in the book, and I'm looking at the graphs, and I'm looking at EPS and PE and beta and all of these terms that I'm like, huh, what are you talking about? He would always go back to invest in stock. So I want to say it had to have been when I was, you know, 24, 25 years old. And I'm like, clearly there's something to it, because this man in this book is saying very simply and plainly, invest in stock. I'm hearing the scientists and the office managers every weekend, not every weekend, but every time we're back in the office, you know, lunch break, cooler conversation, you know, they're talking about the stock market. It was the seed. Like that was the first seed of there's money to make in this industry. And I'll figure it out one day, right? So that was, what, 15 years ago? Of me having that seed planted.
All right, and I love your story about, because at this time you're not married yet, right?
Mm-mm.
Or are you?
I was a single, recent college graduate, living away from home, and I don't know, I just wanted to have fun and party and travel.
Right. But as you just mentioned, mm-hmm. I think, you know, you were at least aware of your surroundings,
yes.
To be able to pick up what some other people around you were doing. And even though you didn't feel comfortable enough to ask them, you kind of was like, well, let me look into this. And
mm-hmm.
I could tell that you were a researcher, because I don't think I would have bought a book. I probably just would have been like, I overheard y'all talk about something. What y'all talk about?
So that's the thing. And I'm sorry to cut you off. My personal.
No, no, go ahead.
I always say, you know, I'm shy, right? So going the book route is definitely, that's just what I do, because I don't know. I feel like, you know, if I ask them the question, you know, what would they think? What would they say? So let me, you know, just go and do it my way. In which, honestly, I'm so grateful for, you know, doing it that way in terms of picking up the book, because it was my book, and I was able to, you know, scribble, scrabble, highlight, make notes, take notes, and do all of that good stuff that comes with the thing that belongs to you.
Yeah, and you know, as you say that, what it actually makes me think of is the BI community as a whole is one of self-education. Many people in BI are in BI and have been in BI for a few years or a few decades because they like the self-discovery. They like teaching themselves. They like being around other people and learning together. And so this community is very different from, I think, other places or organizations because this isn't a place where you're going to come and hear the next hot stock tip or be sold on, you know, a Ponzi scheme or anything like that. The people here are readers, they're investigators, they like to do their own research, and they like to be in a group with other people that do their own research so that they can compare notes and ask questions. So I think that, you know, what you said is really important because when you own your own learning, then, you know, the way you talk about it, think about it, how you walk and interact with that knowledge is much different. It's much different than if you were to just employ, let's say, a financial advisor or, you know, a financial professional to do it for you. You know, we're all educated investors. And so even if we do employ help of other people, we know those questions to ask because we've had guests on the show, just talk about how they got or how other people got, all because they were not willing yet to educate themselves. And that in and of itself was their first big learning lesson so that they can take responsibility for their own learning, especially investment learning.
Yeah, because I would say, you know, I have friends who, you know, I don't know, it seems like over the past couple of years has been a thing to do or the thing to talk about. And, you know, with my friends, they will, you know, they downloaded apps and they're doing their thing, right? I'm not knocking anyone's way of, you know, making money. But for me, it was always, I need to know what this stuff means because you can get lost in it, right? You can get lost in the hype. You could get lost in the, yeah, exactly. So for me, it was always, I want to make an informed decision. I don't know if that's personality, but for me, I just felt like if I'm going to put my money anywhere, because I don't got a lot of money, I want to do it safely and I want to do it smart. So, you know, everything that you're saying as it relates to the education component, that is so important that you're an educated investor opposed to an investor who is just willy-nilly, you know, picking the hottest trend and not really knowing, like, where your money is going. So, I will say the BI members who I'm around, you know, they slow me down. They're like, nope, research, read it. We're not doing anything unless it's, you know, 5 years proven that they're a growth company. And I love that. I really, really do.
Wow. So let's take it back before we get into that moment.
Okay.
It took you 15 years
to
come back?
So 15 years to come back to, like, the stock stuff. But in terms of just investing, I will say the first the very first investment that I tapped into was retirement investment, you know, through my employer. And I remember, you know, once I left the Department of Forensic Science and moved back to New York, I was working for a nonprofit organization in which they didn't offer any type of retirement, you know, options to the employees. And my coworker, she said to me, she was like, okay, well, they don't offer it, but you can still get one. And I'm going to give you the names and who can, you know, get you, you know, get you started. So back in 2008, that was the very first time that I opened up a Roth IRA. And for the most part, you know, was putting my monthly contribution to that. But, you know, it wasn't the stock, right? Like, I'm just sending my check, you know, away to this company, and I'm getting my statements quarterly. And that was how far I knew. Like, I'm looking at the charts, I'm looking at the graphs, still not able to read and understand what's going on, but I knew that my money is doing something, because the statements will reflect that, oh, I started with this, but there's, you know, all of this other stuff happening in which I'm like, oh, okay, it's growing, and I can't touch it until I retire. So I'm just going to, you know, just keep doing that. And so, yeah, 2008 would be the very first time that I said, you know what, let me actually invest. And it was a Roth IRA. It wasn't stock. It wasn't the stock market, rather.
Well, I mean, I think, and I love having this conversation with people, especially beginner investors, because, you know, most people, when they get started, they're getting started in a retirement account. But some people don't realize that you still have to choose something inside of the retirement account. And it's to me, it's an amazing learning lesson, because, you know, I commend everybody that is wise enough, like you were, to have started when you did. And then it just takes that opportunity to the next level when you realize, oh, wait, I should be doing a next step within this Roth IRA, whether that be mutual funds, index funds, stocks, depending on where your retirement account is. That company may have only a select amount of holdings that you can invest in, or may have almost the whole world. So what made you start your retirement, your Roth IRA, in 2006, 2008?
So I will say it was the passing of my grandmother. She passed away in 2007, and I want to say that she passed away with nothing, you know, no money, no anything to give to her children, to her grandchildren. So with that, I was like, I don't ever want to retire, because I felt like as soon as my grandmother retired from working, because she was working for New York City's Department of Environmental Protection. So I'm like, you know, she worked all of these years, and she retired, and she didn't get to enjoy her retirement. And when it was all said and done, she didn't have anything to show for it. So from that, it was, I'm never going to retire, and I don't want to pass away with nothing to give the people that I love, you know, whether it's I didn't have my daughter back then, but it was just, you know, something on the inside of me that was pretty much saying, I want to be able to give something back. I had a nephew at the time, and I'm like, I want to be able to give him something. So I would say it was that really, you know, gave me a outlook on the importance of passing something down to, you know, the next generation.
Okay, awesome. And I mean, I think It's interesting because I have a similar story. I was much younger, but I learned a lot through the passing of my own grandmother, and it was a revelation of how much my family did not know how to pass down assets and handle money, and that started my mom's quest on educating herself, and fast forward, we ended up at Better Investing. So I think that those life events, if handled properly, if you know, if you have some level of awareness while you're going through it, it can really serve as a springboard into some lessons learned and some wiser ways of living. So,
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, you emailed me about 3 months ago.
Yes. Wait. Was it an email or did I just pick up the phone and call
you? No. You emailed me because, you know, you still was like, I'm shy. I'm and I was like, let's hop on the phone. And so we talked Sunday. It was a Sunday.
Yep.
And I thought your story was amazing.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm going to do a quick plug for Black single mothers, whether divorced or not.
Okay.
Because there is a certain level of clarity that they have at a certain part of their in their life, especially when they get divorced, where they have this shift in perspective and realize it's on me. And I need to do this for me and my child. And I'm telling you, I just love these women because they just have this different, you know, perspective on life and just start blazing this trail toward a better life for them, their family. And, you know, the courage comes out, the just, you know, and it's to me, it's just a beautiful thing to see. And so I'm not going to tell you a whole story, but but I will say that is the energy that you had, the determination that you had when we did talk on that Sunday. So can you share with the people a little bit of your full circle moment with you know, the books and just everything? Because, I mean, it's only been about 3 months from my side, but I'm so excited to have you as a guest today because we'll get into what you have learned, but I'm amazed at what you've learned in just a couple of months of being a BI member and, you know, attending classes and just, you know, this thing that you're doing for whatever your reasons are.
So let's see. How can you say it? Life has a way of, you know, it has this way of turning things upside down. Like you will have, you know, this vision, you will have this plan, you will have this ideal of this is what my life is going to be like, right? And then the universe comes in and like messes it up, right? So for me, it was, you know, I am married, I give birth, I am, you know, just in this space of, yeah, this is what is going to be, right? And stuff gets real. Like, it gets real in the sense of relationship issues, you know, the husband has his way of wanting to live, I have my way of wanting to live, and we're like living the way we want to live, not together, not unified. And it came to the point where it was like, okay, we can't do this no more. I can't do this no more. I don't want to do this no more. I'm just ready to stop in this. You go your way, I go my way, and that's what it's going to be. And with that come feelings, right? With that comes, okay, don't ask me for nothing, closing down the bank account, don't you call me, you know, so then it's like, oh, wait a minute, the bank account that I used to have access to, I don't have access to that bank account no more. So the bills that I got to pay, I can't use that account. So it was, for the most part, an eye-opener in the sense of, Shamika, it's one thing to be the Shamika who's single and she just have herself to worry about, but it's another thing to be the Shamika who's going through a divorce and there's a child who still has needs and still have wants and, you know, a lifestyle that still needs to be maintained. And, you know, to go through a divorce, which is a very painful, painful thing, but it was also a motivator of, wait a minute, I can't ever allow myself to rely on a man, another human being, for the things that I need and the things that I want. And I'm raising a daughter, so I need for her to also understand that she needs to be able to stand on her own and have her own. And it's okay if there's another person a part of that picture, but if that person decides to go and to leave and say goodbye, she's still okay. So for me, it was definitely a, you know, it was an eye opener in the sense of the things that were once happening together, we're not doing it together no more. And I wasn't prepared for what the not together was going to look like. And because I wasn't prepared for it, it woke me up to, Shamika, you got to get it together. And you're not going to, you know, you're not going to fall on your face. It's not an option, because you have, number one, a child, and then you have a legacy of women in your family who didn't drop the ball. They kept going. They kept moving forward. So when the divorce happened and things were being split up and the accounts were being shut down and, you know, the phone calls weren't going the way I needed them to go, it was, all right, get you a second job, you know, line up the babysitters and let's do this. Let's get this, because one thing he won't be able to say is, oh, without me, she wasn't XYZ. So that was definitely, you know, a part of the energy in the sense of I'm going to come out on top regardless. So with that, it was basically, Shamika, you have to buckle down and you have to get this financial stuff situated and you have to get it right, not only for yourself but for your child. And I want to say I thank God, right, for the Shamika at the age of 28 who was putting money in a Roth IRA, because that Shamika was able to pick up a phone and say, so this account with these statements that y'all send to me, what can I do with it? Because right now I'm having a crisis and I need some support. I need some help. And I was able to bail myself out of certain situations because of that. So it was also a matter of, oh, those seeds that I planted years ago was able to help me during this time. So I definitely have to continue to do what I was doing before, plus more, so that at the end of the day, when need be, if need be, or whatever the case may be, I'm okay. So that was definitely, you know, a moment in my life where financial empowerment, whatever we want to call that spirit, that came alive inside of me. And I think I've been kind of going in that direction ever since 2016. So, yeah. And it's so funny that you was like, you sent me an email, because I swear to you, Ione, I spoke to you that one day, and it's as if we knew each other. Like, I don't know why I felt that way, because you were on the phone, and you're like, okay, I'm just curious to know why do you want to invest? What's your story? And I'm like, no one has ever asked me that before, but she wanted a story. Here's the truth. Here's the hardcore truth. I don't want to be poor. I don't want to be broke. And I have a daughter, and financial, you know, planning is so, so, so important, not only for myself, but for her, because she will have to, you know, I hope one day she doesn't have to go through what I went through in terms of a divorce, but she will have to financially, you know, stand on her own one of these days. So it's kind of like, well, how do I set that up for her? Because, you know, it's hard trying to start from the bottom and work it out the best way.
You made me think, I didn't hear this from my mom, but a lady that my mom mentors said, my mom said this, and I don't know, she could probably chime in, but she basically was like, as long as your why is bigger than your excuse, then you'll make it.
I love that. Way. I love that. I love that. Yeah. Because when it came to you know, those nights of my life, it was definitely those moments of, nah, this is not how I'm going out. I can't. Not for myself and not for the life that I brought into this world.
So the correct statement is, as long as your why is bigger than your excuse, you will make it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a quick question in the chat about how old is your daughter?
She is 9 and she'll be 10 in like 2 weeks. She's a little Capricorn.
Baby Capricorn.
Yes.
And I will say this too, this as a piggyback to your story, I think that if your daughter has been watching you through this process, which I know she has, the other part of what you're teaching her is a spirit of resilience. You know, like you said, you know, you wouldn't want her to go through a divorce. And I think all parents don't want their children to go through certain heartaches that they went through. But what I will say, though, is if you're not sharing either the story or being transparent, then they won't learn the lessons you're learning as you're going through it. And I'm excited. I haven't met your daughter, but you know, I'm excited for what she will be learning as you're learning in this process because, you know, again, let me get this right. Did you become a BI? You became a BI member like 2 months
mm-hmm.
ago, right?
Yep, September of this year. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what was your impetus for becoming a BI member?
So it was definitely, what is it? So coronavirus, right? COVID 2020, you see what it did to the world. And how everything, you know, on the news, like how everything played itself out, for me, it was, Shamika, now is the time. Stop procrastinating. Stop, you know, putting this off. Just do it. And, you know, going to your class, sitting in on the club meetings that I was sitting in on before I became a club member, you know, it was something that, number one, was a requirement, right? Like, you if you're going to be a part of the club, you have to be a BI member. But it was time, right? The state of this world made me realize it's time to stop playing. You said that you wanted to do this. This was a dream that you wanted to accomplish, a goal you wanted to accomplish. It's time. So that's why I just paid my dues and finally, you know, just took that leap.
So you're part of an investment club that's a Better Investing Investment Club. How did you come to know them, and what made you want to join them as opposed to just doing it on your own?
So back in May of this year, I was on the BI website, and they had posted a model club was going to be featured on May 9th. And I remember going to the model club, you know, just having my camera off, having the volume on mute, well, not the volume, but having the iPad on mute or whatever. And I'm listening to these numbers being thrown around. I'm listening to, you know, the people conversing about stock. And I remember writing down questions, and I pretty much saved my questions to the end, and one of the gentlemen, his name was Joe. Joe was like, well, you know, I'm not going to answer all of the questions. I had a million questions. He was like, I'm not going to answer all of the questions, but what you can do is send me an email with the questions, and we'll do it that way. So being connected to Joe from that model club meeting, Joe was really, really nice enough to tell me, hey, you know, we're located in Virginia, but there's a BI member who is in your area, Brooklyn. And because, you know, a lot of clubs are private, he said, I will reach out to her and see if it's okay if I pass along your information. So he pretty much made the connection. And so grateful for him to do that, because the person who he connected me with, Miss Isla, she is now one of my mentors. So Isla is a part of a club, and Isla, you know, reached back out to me, and I expressed my interest to her, and she was like, I'll talk to the club and see if you're, you know, you get the green light to come to our next meeting. And from there, that's when the magic happened. They, you know, opened up the club for me to be a guest, and they've been stuck with me ever since. And I tell them all the time, I'm not going anywhere, because they are so supportive. You know, they take their time to give me the one-on-one outside of club meetings. And I personally feel I would be a fool not to have that, you know, type of support. I'm really, really grateful for them. And I'm going to shout them out, you know, Isla, Les, Dottie, Diane, Anat, Joey. Hopefully they're listening. But I really do thank you guys for taking me in the way you all took me in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's beautiful. And like you said, the BI community overall is very warm, supportive, engaging, and willing to help you as long as you're willing to help yourself. And also, a lot of clubs are private. So, you know, we won't say the club's name, but I think that it is beautiful that you were and have been able to join an investment club, because we do talk about the power of investment clubs here on hashtag My Investment Story, because everybody isn't kind of like a solo investor, you know, especially when you're beginning, whether it be an investment club, whether it be the Better Investing classes, the webinars. It really is important to take advantage of group learning. Some people like the classroom style. Some people like, you know, different things. But there's the African proverb that says, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, you know, go together. And I'm really learning the power of the collective. And with that being said, you finally was able to join the club. They accepted you as a member. Mm-hmm. How long ago?
In November. In November. Yes. And I forgot to shout out Rochelle, because if it wasn't for Rochelle, I wouldn't be talking to you, Ione.
She's the one that told you about the beginner class.
Yes, because Rochelle is located in Florida, so she gets the BI South Florida chapter information, and she texted me. She was like, "Shamika, I think you should do this." And I was like, I am going to do it. Thank you. So, yeah, as far as the club goes, they've been investing for years. The club has been around for about 20 plus years. So I do feel like I'm around some experts, and they're teaching me a lot.
Wow. And this, Diane and Isla says, we're so proud of you. So, thank you. Thank you both for taking Shamika under the wing, because I do think that, yeah, a lot of us really just need the support, need somebody to be able to call, to talk to reach out to when we have questions, especially in this critical beginning stage.
Mm-hmm.
So Better Investing overall, and the South Florida chapter is a part of the Southern region. So shout out to Howard Johnson, who's our regional director. But, you know, we are making strides to really, as a region and as Better Investing National, provide support for investment clubs that are 1 to 5 years old, because we've done the research to know that if we can be a resource to them and do club visits, or, you know, just engage them so that they are not walking as a toddler alone, they have an increased chance to be a club with longevity. The majority of clubs fold within the, you know, the first 3-5 years. We had a guest on, Miss Yvonne, that, you know, started a club and many years ago, and I think it only lasted less than a year, and then now she's at it again. But, you know, as Better Investing, we really want to provide that type of support, because whether it be an individual investor or whether it be an investment club, learning, you know, until you kind of get that rhythm and the stride and the, you know, the support, then you can kind of be overwhelmed and, you know, and not stick with it. So, and then, of course, shout out to Rochelle, who just sent you a message. One of the things that I did want to ask you, because, you know, again, congratulations on being accepted in the club, because, I mean, you can share with the people the fact that you didn't just show up and they accepted you. I mean, you kind of had to, like,
prove yourself. You had to do
a presentation. You had to do a SSG, which is a stock selection guide. I mean, walk us through that, because when you called me, that was one thing. Then you came to the four-part beginner investing class, and then you just knew terms. I was like, wait, pick this stuff up quick, girl. So, yeah, just walk us through, like, you know, just some of the stuff you've been learning and and had to, you know, prove yourself in the club to show that you were worth being a member?
So honestly, I think when it with the club that I'm a part of, I think what they appreciated the most was my commitment to just showing up, as well as my eagerness to, you know, go outside of them to learn, you know, learn the language, learn what it was to analyze and study a stock. So, you know, like I said, coronavirus shut the nation down, right? And in the month of May, it's me pretty much, you know, reading, and I'm like, it's time for me to, you know, get really serious with me wanting to invest. So I went to the model club in the month of May, and I want to say myself and Isla, we you know, through that connection, the month of June, I believe it was when I went to the very first club meeting, and it was Rochelle sending me the class for you that you were facilitating, and I went to that class for 4 weeks. And I'll tell you this: no one knew. I work on Saturdays, right? I work all day Saturdays, and I told one of my clients, I said, "Listen, for the next couple of Saturdays, I cannot meet with you at 11 o'clock. So I'm going to meet with you at my lunch break. Is that okay?" And she gave me the green light that it was okay for me to meet with her at 1 o'clock. And I will say it was, I only has my time from 10 to 12. And at 12 o'clock, I have to hurry up and log off because I have another client to see at 12. And, you know, I want to say the universe responds to that because, you know, I remember when you gave us the homework assignment and I took it back to the club and I was like, well, in the class that I'm taking, we have to study a stock. And Les, the president of the club, was like, well, I went to a BI ticker talker webinar and I need you to study this stock. And he was like, look at UHS. And that was my first homework assignment, right? The Universal Health Services. And it was taking what I was learning in your class, you know, what I was learning in the club meeting and bringing it all together so that I could prove myself basically like, yeah, I want this. I'm curious. I want to learn what this is all about. So yeah, I think just the commitment is what pulled me through because, you know, I think it was one meeting that I had to miss because I believe I was traveling, but I couldn't make it. But I told myself, I'm like, no, you're going to go to every meeting. You're going to sit. You're going to take your notes. You're going to ask your questions. And you are going to let them know that you're in this and you want to be a part of what they're doing. And I do think that was respected. So
yeah, I mean, and your contribution to the class was phenomenal. I just want to give you a shout out. Yeah, because, you know, as a teacher, you teach, but unless the student is raising their hand, asking a question, you don't know what is being digested, what's being understood, what's going over your head. And I love, this is the first time that the South Florida chapter did its beginner investor class all virtual. Last year we did it in person and virtual. But, you know, there were a few people in the class that were engaging. And it really did help with the learning experience of everybody else because not everybody – a lot of people are shy, let me just say that. So not everybody is going to be willing to ask that question. But when you asked a certain question, I was able to call on you about certain things. And I think that just really helped everybody to feel engaged and know that we're all in it together and we don't all have it. But this is how we can look at it, you know. So the examples, the everything. I think it was a phenomenal class.
It was a phenomenal class. The fact that you only offer it once a year, Ione, like, come on, girl.
I have to talk to my board. But I do think that, you know, we could probably do a spring. I mean,
okay.
I have to, you know, wait and probably get permission about making some changes to the schedule. But I think the increase of, this is the most we've ever had in the class. We had 40 people. And I think, you know, just with the interest level and the engagement and the technology, we may be able to, you know, again, offer it. Because I think in the past, it was just like older BI members like, oh, we've already taken that. That's the basics. But
well, I'm telling all of my friends, take Ione's class.
Well, I would love to have them. But I think that, you know, once they get plugged into Better Investing, I like to just think of myself as the entry point. But, I mean, we have so many, like in your investment club, we have so many people that have been in BI. Last week, our guest has been a member of BI for 29 years.
Oh, wow.
You know, so there's so many people that have a wealth of knowledge, have a wealth of experience, and they really want to share. And so I am really excited for a lot of non-investors that are looking to be new investors. Because I really do think that Better Investing is still one of the best kept secrets. But it shows us all, you know, no matter how much money we make or don't make, you know, it shifts your mind from the overnight rich dream we have to the practical week to week. Bi-weekly, every month, let me put this money away, let's start an investment club, let me pull my resources, let me just do a little bit over time. And, I mean, you're going to spend that 20, 30 years anyway, but, you know, you end up creating your own wealth with that.
Which is so, so important, only because I was talking to my mentor a couple of weeks ago, and I told her, I said, you'll be amazed at how much money you're wasting, right? Like just day-to-day wasting on, you look around and you're like, I don't even know what I spent the money on. My mom is the ultimate saver, right? Like my mom, to this day, if you have a dollar, save a quarter, right? And she's always doing like these challenges, 52-week challenge, you know, let's do a save money challenge. And this year I told her, you know what? I'm going to come in with you. I'm going to save $5 every week, right? For 52 weeks. And it's that money. It's that money that I started the first week of January, my $5. And then, of course, you know, throughout the month, I'll add a little more. But that $5 every single week, it's that money that I'm literally using to send off my check to TD Ameritrade. So when you say just saving and you know, letting your money kind of do its thing in the long run, it's important and it's necessary.
Wow, I think you just took this to a whole nother level because we on the show, we usually just talk about, you know, a lot of investor club, their minimum contribution is $25. But, I mean, you brought it down to $5. I mean, and how did that surprise you to set a goal that small? But, I mean, this is your last week of 2020. Have you met it every single week?
Yes. Every week, yep. So this is what it was. It was, you know, I think about, okay, the month of January, I think some of these months have 5 weeks in it, and it'll be, here's the $25, right? So it was just staying committed. And then my mother, thank God for my mother, she reminded me, your 52-week challenge, you got to give me your money for the 52-week challenge. So also having someone to kind of, you know, remind me sometimes, not all the time, sometimes. That, yeah, that was helpful. That was helpful. But, yeah, it's money is an interesting thing, really, really interesting. And how people spend and save money, it's also intriguing. Like, I think I might start studying that too. I think I'm going to get off the phone with, I mean, get off Zoom with you, Ione, and research. What is the psychology behind spending and saving? Because it's something to it.
And with that, let's do the full circle with the two books. So you bought two books about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then earlier this year, when you picked them back up, you realized that both books mentioned NAIC, which is National Association of Investors Corporation, were now known as Better Investing. So talk to me about that kind of aha moment and realizing, like, even though you had that or had crossed the path of us, you know, over a decade ago, your life situation and the now being when you kind of just, it just hit you in a different way and woke you up to like, okay, it's time.
So was, because what was it? During, you know, like when the pandemic hit, it was a lot of time, right? So, you know, even going back to the book, I wrote notes. Like, I don't know if you can see it. Can you see it? So, like, in the cover,
yeah.
I was, like, writing notes, right? And, you know, it was picking it up, reading my notes, getting curious again. And in this book, he speaks about a seventh grade class. A seventh grade class having a portfolio that they're still scratching their heads on Wall Street to figure out how these seventh graders, you know, came up with the numbers that they came up with, the projections that they came up with, the predictions that they came up with, and him using seventh graders as an example of if they can do it, anyone can do it. That to me just took it home, because the way the teacher, whoever this teacher was, in the book, she had the children look at what did your parents buy, what household products are your parents using, what do you like to use, who's your favorite sport? What's your favorite underwear brand? Like, just the everyday things. And for these children in this seventh grade class to take the everyday things that they're buying regularly, unconsciously, that their families are buying unconsciously, or, you know, just to live, they use that as an example of, instead of just spending money on the company, why don't you own shares of the company so that the company can send you a check, you know, either a year or 2 years or 3 years from now, and you can continue to buy their stuff. So I would say that example of these kids being able to grasp that concept was pretty much, it was like, I don't know, yeah, I got to do this. If seventh grader can do this, I can do this. And that's what it was.
Tell us the name of the book and show it to us.
I don't know. Can you see it?
So Peter Lynch's Beating the Street.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then
that song came out in the 90s.
This is a very old book.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah, very old.
Right.
And then this book too, and it was this book, Peter Lynch's book was the first book that I read, and I felt like when I started to read this book, it was repeating
a
lot of
The Neatest Little Guide to Stock Market Investing by Jason Kelly.
Yeah, a lot of this, I felt like, hey, he's repeating everything that's in here. So, yeah, this, if I was to make a recommendation, it would be this one.
Beating the Street by Peter Lynch.
Beating the Street by Peter Lynch.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm glad you brought those two books up. And there was a word that I remember when we were recapping after you did your SSG presentation and got accepted to the club about curiosity. So
yeah.
As you give us your last words, your words of wisdom, your advice to, you know, new investors, talk to us about how curiosity has really, you know, taken you over the edge and given you kind of that courage to really pursue this thing.
So, like I said, growing up, I was poor. Conversations about the stock market, it was spoken about in my home. And fast forward to I'm a 20-something year old, you know, recent college grad, and I'm working my first job, and I'm hearing, you know, these established professionals throwing the stock market around, you know, using the words, using the language. And it was, what is that? What are they talking about? What are they doing? Because these same people, you know, they own their homes. When it was time for them to go on their vacations, they were able to go away for months. And it was just a different lifestyle. And it was, for me, something is to that. Economics and economic freedom can give you a lifestyle that another way just it can't give you. So for me, it was wanting, and yeah, I just wanted to know. Like, I don't know. I don't know if there's anything inspiring for me to say right now, Ione. I just really wanted to know, what was the secret? How come they were able to live this way, speak this language that was never available to me? And I want to know. I should know. I can know. So go and get it. Go and find out. Yeah. So just, yeah, I
think you ended it perfectly. I mean, because we're here, and
yeah,
it's on you to come seek us out, check us out. You can find out more about us at betterinvesting.org. You know, I'm the vice president of the South Florida chapter, and that's why we're here. We're here for the people that are willing to take that step, are curious enough to even check us out, are curious enough to even do a 90-day trial, or, you know, just pay for a one-year membership. Check out our videos. Listen, learn, ask questions. I think you hit it on the head, Shanika.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And to your team, Ione, I thank you. I thank you all. And I remember when I saw the questions in the email, you didn't ask the question, but I'm going to answer the question anyway. It was, well, what would you recommend? And I recommend Ione's class. Take Ione's class, because
I didn't tell you to say that.
You will walk away with, yeah, you'll walk away with so much. And I appreciate you, Ione, for, you know, the class, for this opportunity, and, yeah, me even being able to text you. Ione, what does this mean?
Hey.
I truly appreciate you.
You are so welcome, and as anybody knows me, I am here for the curious. you know, I've shared my email before, I've shared my number before, but, you know, I'm a Better Investing member and I'm a volunteer in addition to some other titles. But at my core, I'm a Better Investing member and I'm a Better Investing volunteer. And I just want to share all of the resources that Better Investing has to offer because I'm Black, I'm a woman, I'm young, and in some spaces I'm rare. And it doesn't have to be, and that's why I wanted for people to hear your story because, you know, again, last week we featured Mr. Roy Chastain, 30 years. We got a BI member, 3 months, making waves, having an impact. It's making an impact in her life. And so to share everybody's story at the different stages, you know, if I can do more, I would. But so welcome, Shamika. And to everybody, I really appreciate, and we really appreciate you listening in to another episode of Hashtag My Investing Story. Again, check us out at betterinvesting.org. You can find a chapter near you. We also will be next year, May, we will be having the Better Investing National Convention. And every Saturday, the Saturday of that convention, just believe it's May 16th, we will be promoting the free day where we're going to be doing financial empowerment and bringing a lot of resources to the community. So to make them aware of BI and why investing is important, the power of compound interest, time value of money, how to check on your Social Security so you can plan for your retirement, all of those resources will be there. So check us out. We'll be back. Tune in next Wednesday at 7. Have a wonderful night. And again, thank you so much, Shamika.
Thank you.
Goodbye.